The recordings have started.
Great. Thanks, JR. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group call on the 19th of December, 2016. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call as we have quite a few participants online. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room, so if you're only on the audio bridge, please let yourself be known now. All right, great, thank you. And as a reminder to all participants, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn the call back to Aubrey Doria.
Thank you. This is Aubrey speaking. Okay, the next thing is to go through the agenda. So going through the agenda starts, then we go into the SOI check. Then there's a proposed new item, which is brief working team subgroup brief updates, working track. Basically, this meeting had meant to be a just CC1 meeting, but we postponed it several times for various reasons and postponed it even through, I think, a regular meeting period. And so basically wanted to ask the work track just to give if they had any announcements, any critical issues that we needed to look at, and so on. So really quite a quick pass through that. So hopefully that's okay with people. Then the rest of the call, we go into the CC1 review, starting at question 4. Jeff will be leading it this time, see how far we get. Our object is to try and finish before the Christmas holiday, because we've missed 2 meetings. That may be a challenge, but there still is time to schedule another meeting. If we don't make it, we can discuss that at the end. Then there's any other business. So how does the agenda, does anybody have any questions or objections on the agenda changes? Okay, I see no hands, I hear no voices. So I guess proposed new 3 is in, and we'll move on to SOIs with this agenda. Anybody who has changed their SOI, has changed circumstances, needs to record it. Does anybody have anything they would like to speak of in terms of changed SOI at this point? I see no hands. I hear no voices. Okay, thanks. So then the next thing is to move on to the work track brief updates. As I say, announcements, it's okay to say nothing. You know, we have nothing. It's okay to bring up an issue you'd like the group to listen to. So work track 1. Who do we have that will speak on that one?
Hi, it's Krista. Can you hear me?
Please, yes, I can hear you fine.
Just a quick update on our last call. I'll just do a quick on the topics. So RSP accreditation, we're currently on hold until some details on the certification program are known, and then we'll, I guess, figure out what areas we'll focus on. Applicant support, we're looking for some ideas and suggestions to overcome the current obstacles. The application process, we're needing some costing insight, and Steve has a request into finance. Application types and fees, we're working on, along with the submission period. So we're currently working on queuing. We ran out of time, and hopefully we can jump on that in January. And currently we're a little bit on our timeline for 2 or 3 different topics, but hopefully we can catch up in January once we have some of the information. And that's all I have, unless Sarah has something to add.
Thank you. Anything to add? Okay, any questions? Sorry, I got distracted reading a chat. Any questions? Okay, then move on to work track 2. Do we have anything? And that's what the chat was saying, is that we may not have anyone for work track 2. Is either Phil or Michael on the call? Okay, if not, Phil is here now. Phil. Can you give us a quick, what I was asking was not for a full report, but just if there were any announcements, any quick status update, any issues you wanted to bring to the full group. Otherwise, it's fine to say nothing to report. So, Phil, do you have anything that you would like to add? Are you mute? Ted? Phil is typing. Probably doesn't have voice support. So while Phil is typing, I'll move on to work track 3, and I'll read Phil's response later. Work track 3, are there any issues, updates, changes, announcements, what have you, that you'd like to make at this point? Who would like to speak for work track 3? Yes, Karen, please.
Hi, everyone. This is Karen. Just a reminder that we have a call tomorrow scheduled for the 2000 UTC hour where we're going to continue our work on objections. So I hope that you will all be there. That's it for me. Robin, anything?
Hi, this is Robin. I would just encourage people to take a look at some of the materials that have been put forward on the legal rights objections so we can have a conversation about them. In particular, there's a WIPO final report, there's an inter-report, and a tabulation of statistics. And so really the hope is to get some good discussion going on these materials in our next call. So I'd just like these materials are located on the Wiki, so I'd just like to encourage people to have a quick read at those before tomorrow's call so we can have a nice discussion on those materials. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Robin. And Caruth, I see your hand up.
Yes. Do we have the meeting of this group tomorrow? Today, one meeting, tomorrow,
yes,
another meeting? Robot?
Yes, I believe that is the schedule because many meetings were missed. And people are trying to meet their work schedules, so they've scheduled meetings. And they were announced at least a week ago, so that, yeah, they were scheduled. Anything else?
Meetings one after the other. In 2 days, you have two meetings.
Two different days. Yes, that is the case this time. It's because of the whole end of the year and the various meetings that got canceled.
So, Witwe Malfe.
Excuse me?
Quickly done, badly done. This is Vic Femal saying.
Well,
yes, because people are
not trying to do it quickly. I'm sorry you're tired, and I think we're all tired, but we're all, you know, going to have a couple days without meetings coming up, but I understand. But the meetings are on different topics, so let's hope it works out. Okay, Work Track 4, did you have an update? And who was going to speak? Rubens, I see your hand. Thank you.
Thanks, Aubrey. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
I do. Rubens, for the record, on our last work track call, we had some discussions following up on our Hyderabad face-to-face meeting on whether technical capability should be evaluated before or after the process. We already have issued one consensus call that is still ongoing for doing assessing technical capability after the process. But we are discussing also financial. We originally have one work track call this week, December 22, since we are facing very strong competition from Christmas and Santa Claus denied postponing Christmas this year, I need to ask if anyone has any objections on us canceling it. So far, our projected attendance seems to be very low. So that's one time for asking if you have any objections on Work Track 4 session this week being canceled or not. So let's give some time for people to think or type.
Yeah, I don't see any hands coming up to object. Anybody that objects to Work Track 4 canceling this week's meeting, please put an agree sign. No, it'll be a disagree. If you object, it's a disagree. So a red cross if you object to Work Track 4 canceling this week. Okay, I see no objections at all coming up. So I think you're probably fine, Rubens, and it does partially, and it answers a let's not put too much on people's plates this week issue. So thank you very much for helping with that issue.
Okay. Thank you.
I just wanted to remind people on Rubens' report that when he speaks of consensus call, he's speaking of a work track consensus call, and that just means that's what goes into their recommendations to this group. We'll go all through the consensus process again once we have a full document and with the full group. I just wanted to make sure I got that said, since sometimes there's confusions on local consensus versus, you know, larger group consensus. So thanks on that. Ruben, your hand is still up. Is that the old hand? Thank you. Okay, I never got anything from Phil, and he was typing. He's still listed as typing, but I'll just leave that alone for now. And if we get something to rebate later, I'll bring it in. And at this point, would like to turn the call over to Jeff. Oh, wait a second. I didn't ask. Any questions on the Work Track 4 report? Other than the cancellation, nobody wanted to cancel. Okay, great. In which case, Jeff, the floor is yours for continuation of CC1 review. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Aubrey.
Do you want me to help with hands, or do you deal with that?
I'll try to deal with it, but if you see me falling behind, feel free to jump in. I have two different screens today, so hopefully that'll work out. So we are back on CC1, but unlike the first three topics that we discussed, these next few are I think much more procedural, and hopefully we could get through a little bit quicker. I tend to think, just you know, personally speaking, that some of these principles that we're going to be talking about with predictability, really the way you address them is through addressing the specific items to make them more predictable, and then a process by which you could introduce sudden changes or things that would not disadvantage any of the applicants but also serve the community. So with that said, the general concept subject 4 is predictability should be maintained or enhanced without sacrificing flexibility. Any event changes must be introduced into the new GTLD application process. The disruptive effect to all parties should be minimized. Not surprisingly, there is no one that submitted comments that disagreed with that notion. But there were some initial findings and conclusions that we had talked about as a group early on, and I think were also reflected in the comments we received from the GAC, the registries, and the IPC. So as a general notion, we asked the question of, was the round of 2012 sufficiently predictable given external factors while balancing the need to be flexible? And then obviously explain your answer. And so with the three responses, the GAC stated that it appreciated the importance of predictability at the pre-application, application, and ongoing post-application stages, especially during the 2012 round. The first of its kind, a kind that may have justified a number of adjustments during the implementation phase. However, this should not be the prime or only consideration. It's difficult for the GAC or anyone else to assess whether the round was sufficiently predictable. The GAC responded and advised on emerging issues on their merits. Such a large-scale exercise with what turned out to be few useful precedents was always going to require flexibility and adjustment. Is there anyone from the GAC? I think the statement's pretty self-explanatory, but is there anyone else from the GAC that wants to just add some flavor to that, or anyone have any questions on their statement? Okay, again, these are a lot of some of the procedural aspects, so I don't expect too many questions. The real question is whether we can devise a process that meets all these requirements. So the registries had a view that said, you know, no, that it was not sufficiently predictable, reflecting on the 2007 policy. And they said the timeline was highly unpredictable. The process saw several last-minute changes, which did not follow from the GNSO policy recommendations and were not reflected in the applicant guidebook. And there were some examples cited, like the straw man, which was the intellectual property protection, specifically the trademark plus 50. The Spec 11 changes, which are still being discussed to this date, name collisions, and the unilateral amendment provisions of the ICANN registry agreement. Apparent inconsistencies in objection and community priority determinations further contributed to the applicant uncertainty. Now that the 2012 round is over and we can glean lessons from it, we all know how to fix it in the future. Always open subsequent procedure. So with that said, I know we have some participants from the registries. Given that the registries felt that the process was less than predictable, and we'll get into this actually in some of the other statements, but is there anyone that's got questions for the registries? So I think we get into some mechanisms a little bit later on. Sorry, I'm just drinking some water as my voice is deteriorating. Okay. The IPC also made a similar comment in the fact that they didn't believe it was highly predictable. There are significant variations from the program as published in the guidebook versus how it was actually implemented by staff. For example, the midstream prohibition against closed generics, the announcement of and corresponding demise of digital archery as a prioritization methodology, the requirement to develop on-the-fly a process to address rights protection on the release of name collision names, and the ongoing challenges with creating a process for the treatment of country names and codes at the second level. So what's interesting is that the IPC cites different examples in the registries, and if you add all of them up, that's a lot of unpredictable or a lot of changes that were introduced into the process last minute. Does anyone have any comments of how we can address these types of things in the future? Do people have agree with the IPC, the registries? What's the general feeling out there? How do we address changes but still act in a predictable manner? The rules, and then Alan. You're free to speak. You may be on mute, Carlos. Can you hear me? All right. I'm going to go to Alan, and then we'll come back to Carlos.
Thank you. I'd like to think that a second time around, in whatever form the second time takes, we're going to do a better job than the first time. We learned an awful lot in the first time around. There were a whole host of changes that were introduced really only after we saw what the applications were like. And now, presumably, we have an idea. The balance may change, but we're not likely to see absolutely brand new types of applications. I'm sure we're still going to have some corrections to make along the way, because we will be almost certainly will be introducing a lot of changes, and some of those may have an issue with them as we go forward. I think we're going to do a lot better than the last time. I'm not sure we can guarantee that there will not be changes to make sure we correct real problems or perceived problems. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Alan. I'm going to go back to Carlos. Are you able to speak now?
Steve, I'm sorry I lose the track of the paragraph that you're reading now. This paragraph you're reading now.
Okay, well, hopefully you can grab a glass of water or something around you. Donna, you have comments?
Thanks, Steph. Donna Austin. So, largely I agree with Alan. I think we should have learned a lot from the 20.
You're not speaking. Can we please put a mute on? Thanks.
Thanks, Steph. But I would say there's a couple of things that we can potentially flag. So GAC advice was a big factor in slowing down probably two-thirds of the applications. So to the extent that we can try to understand how we reduce the possibility of GAC advice coming in after applications are received this time, it could be helpful. Sorry, it must be catching. And also we had a new CEO that came in with some different ideas about how things could be done, and that resulted in some changes as well, particularly as it related to the registry agreement and also some of the rights protection stuff. So I agree with Alan. I think we should have learnt a lot, but I think there's a couple of red flags where we, to the extent that we can avoid getting GAC advice after applications are received this time should be, it should help in that regard to make sure that things are a bit more predictable next time round. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Donna. And, you know, I'm hoping and as hopeful as you, Alan, are as well. And one thing that we, if you read the chart, one thing that we expected as an anticipated outcome is to develop a framework that could be the basis of policy development. And so hopefully, like you said as well, a lot of these issues will have been sorted out, and we've been working on a number of the issues. So hopefully that will have reduced the unpredictability. But I do think your comments, Donna, on GAC advice are interesting, and I think that's something we're going to have to talk about in Work Track 3 in order to how do we deal with GAC advice, you know, after the round has already started, if it's a topic that was not anticipated prior to the round or application window beginning. Alan?
Thank you. I agree with both you and Donna on things like GAC advice, and I think part of the answer is we need to look at patterns of the kind of advice we got and try to make sure they're covered in whatever the processes we build so that thing does not come as a out of the blue. We've already covered it and perhaps asked the registry in their application or prospective registry in their application to cover the kinds of things that might have been raised during with the kind of GAC advice we saw. Certainly, the GAC advice forced us to look at how the TLDs would be used and the semantics of the name, something that we really didn't want to do to begin with. And maybe the message is we have to do that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Alan. I saw Klaus had his hand up for briefly, but I guess dropped it. Or Klaus, do you want to get in the queue? Or? Okay. Well, let me ask a question. Let's say that this is maybe just something to think about, but let's say that we do address a topic. So let's say in Work Track 2, we somehow figure out and finalize the geographic names issue, and it's completely done and final, and everyone agrees upon it, and it's in the guidebook, or whatever we call this next thing, and then the process starts, but then someone submits an application, and a government has an issue with that, even though it wasn't mentioned in the guidebook. Do what are the thoughts here? You know, do we just have to let it go because that was what the GNSO and others decided? Is there a policy against reopening up issues? What does everyone think about that? Anyone want to tackle that one? Alan?
I don't see how within the bylaws we can say, sorry, you didn't say it earlier, you can't, GAC, you can't give advice. I don't think that's something that we can do within our overall mandate. Maybe someone else sees a way.
Okay, thanks, Alan. So I guess I'm asking, right, that you can't prevent advice coming in, but could you say, well, I'm sorry that that can't apply in this time around, but, you know, we'll keep it in mind for the next time. Donna, do you have a response?
Thanks, Jeff. It may not necessarily answer your question directly, but, you know, one of the conversations that we have in the registry stakeholder group on a number of issues when the GAC raises issues, and this was certainly the point on two characters at the second level, is that if there is any concern or GAC advice, that it be based in some kind of standard like international law. You know, the two character issue at the second level had a, it was a long-running conversation over about a two and a half year period, and from the registry stakeholder group perspective, it was always the case that there are no rights attached to two characters at the second level, even though, you know, they are country codes at the top level. And our argument was always that, you know, if the governments have claims to those two letters second level, then it should be based in some kind of international law or something with authority. So to the extent that we can tie it back to something like that, it might be helpful, but we might be getting a little bit ahead of ourselves at the moment because we just don't know what's going to come up next time around. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Donna. And we'll be discussing the geographic issue in Work Track 2, so I don't want to necessarily get into the specifics of that. I guess my question is, if the GAC or ALAC or anyone else provides advice that's contrary to what is already in the guidebook once the round has started or already in the agreement or, you know, an applicant's already submitted an application, is there, you know, what should be the response from ICANN to such advice? Because that's one of the impediments to predictability is that, you know, ICANN hears from a substantial member of the community, whether it's the GAC in one case or whether it's, frankly, the technical community on name collision. So it's not single out the GAC. You know, what should a standard be from the board in order to make a change midway through a process? Camille.
Yes, I have seen this reference to international law. Why on this specific issue of the two-level use we want to have reference to international law? Are there always for any other thing international law applicable that you want to this particular case international law reference? What international law the people are looking for? You have seen the comments of GAC even at the last meeting that we had, and they are really very strict and saying that this is an important issue for the government, for the GAC, this two-level use in the second, two-letter in the second level, and it seems that people does not want to listen to that, and they just refer to the national law. What international law you want to be used here? Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. And without getting into the substance, it's a good question. I think one that Work Track 2 will have to look at a little bit when they're dealing with geographic names. I think the general issue, if I can bring it up a level, is what factors should we look at, we being the ICANN community, look at in order to decide whether an issue is important enough or merits the changing a process midway through. So I think that's really kind of the overall question is what are those factors? And Donna has said, well, one factor may be international law, which, again, would need definition, as you pointed out. What are some other factors that could influence whether we should look at factors midway through the process? Really?
Jeff, this is Karen. I'm only on audio. Can I get into the queue whenever? Thanks.
Sure. So we have Kavouros and then Karen. Kavouros.
Yes, Steve. I think this issue was discussed at many, many meetings of GACs, and there are two views of GACs. One group of countries, they have no difficulty to use of the two characters at the second level, subject to some issue of a letter, and if they don't reply within X days, they have no problem, they agree. There are others that they want explicit agreement. Does not mean that they disagree, but they want explicit agreement. So you should look from that aspect, but not from international law. And there are some cultural, there are some other issues associated with that CCTLD. If it comes at a certain level and the top level would be something else, but that if it comes immediately after that, you know, that X, in the name of the country, some of the things that may be disturbing from cultural, from the belief point of view, and from many other things. So that is the issue why we put that to be subject to a specific agreement on one group and subject to tacit agreement on other groups. That is that. But we cannot do for international law. There is no international law. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Klaus. Kieran, you're next.
Great, thanks. So I apologize for only being on audio. I think that, Jeff, your question is a really excellent one because the GAC has sort of been known to try to develop these kind of standards but always leave themselves a loophole to object later. So by, purely by way of example, not to get into the debate, but the geographic names issue seems headed towards that issue, right? Nobody seems to be willing to box themselves in within the GAC. So I have a question back to you, to take it back even at a higher level. Isn't the accountability work stream 2 working on the role of governments and the way that their advice can interject into the GNSO policy process? And shouldn't that question be answered by them and not necessarily by us? Is there a way to get the GAC to agree somehow and somewhere in the ICANN process that they need to provide some sort of predictability if they're going to be willing to insert themselves into the policy process after everything has already been done? Thanks.
Thanks, Karen. Well, let me, I don't know the answer to your question. I'm not as familiar with the new ATRT process. Is there anyone that's on this call? Does anyone know more about that? Is that a question that the new Accountability Transparency Review Team will be working on when it's constituted? I'm just looking to see. Alan, you have your hand raised to this. Kavouros?
This is Aubrey jumping in. Also, Matt Zier, who is the co-chair of WS2, indicates that Accountability Workstream 2 is not addressing this. So just wanted to read that one in while we were talking.
Correct.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. So, Kavouros, is that an old hand or something new?
New hand. I don't think that the vote is seen to accountability dealing with this issue. It has nothing to do with the accountability, and we should not overcharge that. And the accountability vote stream 2 has been something arises from the vote stream 1, and there is nothing on vote stream 1 on this issue. This is something should be dealt with different. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Cliff. And Alan?
Thank you. Clearly, the GAC is working with us. We have members on this group today and at other meetings. So presumably, we will try to cover the issues. But I don't think there's anything that we can do to stop a sovereign government from issuing an objection. Now, whether the GAC supports it as a group or not is a different issue. But I don't think we have any tools to prohibit it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. I guess my question wasn't, you know, whether we could prohibit advice. I mean, you could never prohibit it. But would I can be justified in saying, well, you initially said it was okay. We understand you have comments now. Can we change it midway, or does the ICANN board have to say, well, we'll apply that from the next, you know, the next round or the next window? Jorge, great. Do you have a comment?
Hello, do you hear me okay?
Great, yes, thank you.
Hello, this is Jorge Cancio, Swiss GAC representative for the record. I was kicked out of the Adobe room for a while, so I wasn't able to follow all of the conversation. But I just wanted to come back to what the GAC said on this predictability issue. And I think it's a very natural thing that during the first round, which was the first exercise of that kind, there were a lot of issues that couldn't be predicted when the process started. So there had been a lot of policy work by the GNSO, and there had been also GAC principles on immunity of lease as back far as 2007. But at that period of time, I think it's safe to say that the cross-community interaction between the GAC and the GNSO wasn't at its optimal level. So perhaps things that were said by the GAC were not built into the policy and into the applicant guidebook. Other things were built in a way that the GAC didn't agree fully, or other things popped up really after the launch of the 2012 round when the process of the application started. So I think it's difficult to extrapolate the lessons learned by that process to the present day situation where we have a much closer interaction, although it may be improved, between the GNSO and the GAC. And we already had the experience of the first round. So there's a lot of things where we can learn from and where we can really know where the sticking points were and probably are between the GAC and the GNSO, or between parts of the GAC and parts of the GNSO, because on certain topics there's not a closed or a uniform position either in the GNSO or in the GAC. So I think that's something important to bear in mind. And on the other side, on the present-day cooperation, especially with this PDP, I think we are trying to make efforts on both sides to have a conversation from the start on what are the issues that are really important to the GAC, and trying to get the messages from the GAC into the GNSO PDP with the open sessions we had with the co-chairs of this PDP working group, both in Helsinki and in Hyderabad. And I think this is a process which should be ongoing. It should be in line with the recommendations that were adopted by the GNSO GAC consultation group that calls for more three recommendation level interaction between the two groups. And so if we really live up to the spirit of these recommendations, we will avoid a lot of diverging recommendations from one side and advice from the other side. So I think that we are still more or less at the start of this process, and we could be able to avoid of a lot of the problems had in the 2012 round. Thank you.
Thanks, Jorge, and I agree with you. I think there's been a lot of progress, and as Cheryl Lagunor put in the chat, you know, we do recognize and we completely appreciate the fact that the GAC is, through you all, are now much more engaged and proactive, and hopefully will lessen the need for any subsequent advice if we can adequately address these issues during this process. And I want to go to Alan, and then I want to get back into the matrix. Alan?
Yeah, thank you. I think the issue is easier to think about if we change it from the GAC to ESSAC. Clearly, if the ESSAC, after the round is opened and we see who has applied, ESSAC comes up with something equivalent to the name collision problem we had the first time. To what extent the board is going to listen to the ESSAC and take action, it's going to be a judgment call. Clearly, if they believe that the ESSAC is saying the whole Internet will stop working if we do this, they're likely to take action. If it's something more subtle, they may not. And I think the same situation is going to be true with the GAC, that based on the implications of what they're saying, and obviously with the GAC, the negotiations that will have to be held if they are not agreeing to it, it's going to be a judgment call. But I don't think you can rule that out completely.
Thanks, Alan. And we've talked about one side of the equation, right? The need to provide advice and to make sure that issues are aired. I'm actually going to do something and switch to question 4C before we come back to 4B, because I think it's the other side of the equation, the other side of the balance. You know, on the, you know, what is the impact of changing the process on applicants, users, and related parties from a process that lacks predictability? If everyone could mute their phones. So on the harm, if you will, or the impact, we had statements filed by the registry stakeholder groups and the IPC, and the GAC basically said that it would seem appropriate to ask the applicants, you know, what the impacts were. So on that note, the registry submitted a shorter comment than they could have, I'm sure, stating that there are too many unforeseen post-application rule changes and delays as ICANN struggled to implement the process. These changes and delays took their toll on a number of applicants, and as a result, many suffered financial or other losses, while some had to eventually withdraw from the process. And then they point to Doc Green, which is a community applicant with a clearly defined mission, was forced to abandon its application as resources were exhausted due to significant delays and complications with the application process. Predictability for applicants of any future mechanism should be a high priority. And then they said, the IPC said, that real businesses are frustrated about delays, aborted investments, inexplicable changes of direction by ICANN, while businesses bear the cost of such unpredictable actions and outcomes, ICANN also bears the cost to its own credibility and reputation, which were at an extremely low point during the early days of 2012. The lack of predictability also creates an ongoing skepticism and distrust by applicants, users, and others, not least potential applicants. If I can offer a personal comment as one that helped or assisted a number of brand applications, just to kind of point to some facts that between the time that the brands applied, or any applicants applied, but between the time that, that some of the brands that we represented applied in 2012 and the time that they were able to get specification 13 and they were able to actually sign a contract and get delegated 3-4 years later at the earliest, those companies had undergone changes in management, changes by virtue of acquisition or divestiture. The average lifespan of a chief marketing officer in a Fortune 500 company is 18 months. So many of them had switched over sponsors within the corporations 2 or 3 times between the time that they submitted the application and the time that they were able to sign the agreement. And, you know, there are a number of launches have been significantly delayed because of that, and some of them tie the unpredictable nature of ICANN and its process to these difficulties. So anyone else wants to get in the queue, talk about the harms or the impacts? Carlos, you're in the queue. Carlos? Okay, we can't hear you, Carlos. I think there's some there's some chat on the subject. Martin had made a comment that we all agree, or it appears there's an agreement there's a lack of predictability. We should simply list the specific issues that have been raised, check where there's been a change since, and whether those changes had improved predictability. When no change has occurred against a specific issue, review and consider it if a change is needed. As we channel specific through the work tracks, we should also use this as a checkpoint to see if we have sufficiently improved predictability. I think that's a great comment from Martin. If staff can capture that and we can discuss that as to how we can best track those issues, I think we have been doing that, but I think it'd be great to see it charted out like Martin has suggested. The reason I really came to this is at the end of the day, even if we address all of the issues that we can think of or that came out of the last round, there theoretically may always be an issue that gets raised. And I'm wondering, not necessarily on this call, but I'm wondering if we could develop some sort of formula that the board could apply in considering whether the balance of the requested change weighs in favor when you balance that with the harm caused by not making that change, or conversely, the harm caused by making the change, the harm caused to the applicant. So I think at the end of the day, is there some kind of formula that could be applied or some guidance given to the board on how to take that advice? Ruth, is that you? Okay, we can't hear Carlos.
Yes, the example given by Alan, putting his finger on the jack, saying that if there is a decision and ESAC mentioned that if that decision is implemented, there would be no proper function of the ICANN, then board certainly would review that. He just put his finger that if Jack mentioned that these two characters should not be given for the second level, should upside down the situations of the ICANN. Why not the same argument for the other side, GNSO? If this two character is not given to the second level, there would be any tsunami or any earthquake or any upside down of the entire process. So it should be two sides. That has some reasons why not some people, some countries does not agree with that, saying that we need a specific agreement. It does not mean that they disagree, but they want to have time to discuss and give a stated agreement. They are not in favor of this famous implicit agreement after 60 days. Nothing wrong with that. Does not require any international law. that is in all law saying that in many cases explicit agreement is required, and that is the right of the people whose comment is sought. So I don't think that the argument of Alan would be workable here. Thank you.
Thanks, Caruso. And I think, Alan did make a statement that said, you know, what if it was the SAC that gave the advice? Would we automatically agree with the board to stop the process because they say that there's something technical? Again, I'll take off my chair hat and just respond to Alan and say, I don't think that would be automatic, Alan. I think that they would still have to prove sufficiently that the balance of harms weighs in favor of stopping the process. I think there's always a balance test, and I kind of like what Kurt put up there. Kurt just made a comment. I got to scroll up now, or unless someone put it in the notes. But Kurt has said, combining two of my earlier comments, number one, a risk to DNS stability or clear violation of some public interest. Two, a change based on information that was unknowable when the process was developed. And then there's some agreement with that. Martin says that we could test that formula out on the changes that were made during this last application phase. And I think the same test would be applied towards SAC advice or ALAC advice or, frankly, GNSO input as well. Alan.
Thank you. To be clear, I didn't say anything was automatic. I said it would be a judgment call. So I think we're agreeing completely.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks, Alan. So what does everyone think of Kurt's test, if you will, or Kurt's factors? Are people generally in agreement with those? Is that something we obviously I'm not asking to have any kind of final decision here, but does that sound like we can work towards those two principles, and maybe there's others as well? There's Jorge says that we have to be aware that the role of GAC early warning and GAC consensus advice is part of the guidebook of 2012 and therefore part of the rules of the game. Okay, and then Vonda says we could put our green to give you a better view. Okay, why don't we do that, Vonda, and then I'll come back to Jorge's comment. So if for those that think that that agree with Kurt's initial factors, that we should keep working with those. If you could just let me know with a check mark, a green check mark, as a good basis to start. All right, we're seeing a couple. Good. All right, we see a few. Okay, is anyone disagree that those two factors should not be considered at all? If you disagree, put it as red X. Okay. Well, hardly a basis for an informal poll, but I think we could start working on those factors, and then hopefully we can get more agreement from others. Steve.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Steve Chan from staff. And so I just wanted to perhaps tie this discussion back to the anticipated outcomes that you mentioned earlier, Jeff, about a framework for predictability. And so I guess my understanding of the starting point is that perhaps if there's agreement that a framework for predictability still makes sense, that this could be the starting basis for that framework. And assuming if that's the case, then perhaps it would be a good idea to make progress, or one way to make progress is to perhaps ask for volunteers for perhaps a drafting team, or perhaps it's something that the chairs could work on or staff, just throwing it out there to find ways to progress this aspect. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Aubrey, do you want to address Steve's point, or do you want
to... Yeah, I wanted to jump in on Steve's point. I had dropped my hand because I definitely agreed with him in terms of the framework and in terms of using this as one of the starting places. I think if we've got people that want to volunteer and right now, that's good. But I think once we get through this pass on this, I think we're going to have to sit down and look at the various places for drafting teams. So great if we have somebody that wants to get into drafting now, but I wouldn't want to start the drafting teams just yet until we actually lay out the work ahead of us after this pass. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Aubrey. I do want to point out Jorge's comment on the chat as well. I think, his point that politics and policy are difficult to be reduced to a formula. I do think we need to consider that. I think whatever formula we come up with has to have a balance of that. So your point, Jorge, is well taken. And Steve, I agree with Aubrey. Let's get these points down, and then when we kind of meet and boil all CC1 responses down, we'll form some drafting teams on the different elements. But this is a good area to have one. Okay. Going back, because we skipped 4B. But I think we can cover it. It really is asking whether the community believes that some of the changes that came about from the 2000 and I forgot the year now, but basically the cross-community working group on policy implementation, whether that helps to maintain predictability, but at the same time provides the needed flexibility to address changes in circumstances. And so the comment from the GAC was that cross-community working environment is essential to the development of policies that are both workable and maximize benefits to all relevant stakeholders. The GAC is committed to participating in cross-community processes to the extent that its resources permit. Cross-community work also means the involvement of all relevant SOs and ACs performing their roles as defined in the ICANN framework. The GSF-PDP process provides for early and continuing engagement of other SOAC participants. However, it remains a GNSO process which needs to be complemented by the input from other SOACs, including input to the board and prior feedback from such constituencies has not been appropriately reflected in the results of the PDP process. And then the registries have said that, yes, we believe that these frameworks should allow for gradual improvements to be made in the new GTLD application processes without having to gate the initiation of a subsequent application process. And the IPC, we don't know since those terms were not in place in 2012 and have not been applied to any future applications. I guess the word is still out. Would anyone like to offer any comments on their own statements or questions that you may have for the GAC registries or IPC? Aubrey, you had your hand raised. No more.
My hand was raised to comment beyond that. But when you were asking for someone from the GAC registry or IPC that wanted to comment on their own, I wasn't one of those, so that's why I withdrew my hand. But this is Aubrey, and while I'm speaking, I think one of the things that needs to be looked at is that The implementation review teams, as currently conceived, remain a GNSO process. Now, by and large, I think that's okay since they are open to all, and basically when one of those is put together by the working group, it can constitute a very large variety of people from all SOs and ACs. Having said that, there is no really fixed implementation of an implementation review team. So if this group got to the point later where it had a consensus on some specific ways in which an implementation review team could work to better take into account the sort of implementation stage concerns of other SOs and ACs, we could do that later. That would certainly not be something that was in the initial part of our work, that towards the end of our process, when we got into talking about, okay, we've got recommendations and we're about to send them forward, but we also need to plan the implementation review team. We could take up issues then of exactly how that thing can work because it isn't fixed. I think what we've got is good, but we can talk about it. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. Sorry, it took me a second to get off mute. some comments from the chat are mostly that they have to leave. Never mind. This call, by the way, does go until the half past, so I think it was scheduled on the calendar. Am I correct on that?
Yep.
It was scheduled for 90 minutes?
And this is the 30-minute time check. So, yeah, this is half hour to go.
Great. Well, I think in moving on to 4D, which is just kind of any miscellaneous issues on the subject, the GAC has said that many GTLD policies require resolution at the global rather than national level. For many purposes, in practice, this means resolution within ICANN processes to ensure consistency, as application of national laws country by country may not be sufficient. The GAC and others need a degree of flexibility to respond to emerging issues in this global space, which is operated by ICANN and the community according to contractual arrangements and community-developed policies and procedures. The need for such flexibility continues after the conclusion of a PDP. So I think that's just... If there's anyone from the GAC that wants to speak to that, I think it's much of what Jorge and others have made that point as well. Okay, any last words on subject five before we go to, four, before we go to five? Okay, seeing none, moving on to five. Five talks about community engagement in the new GTLD application process. When we discussed this issue early on, months ago, the initial findings were that community engagement is one factor that has an impact on the predictability of the program. There are new engagement mechanisms in place that were not in existence in 2007, such as liaisons and outreach, and you know the fact that we have such a diverse participation from the SOs and ACs in this group is one of those things that's significantly changed from 2007. But no matter how robust and inclusive the PDP is, it's likely impossible to account for every possible scenario. Reliable and predictable mechanisms need to be in place to highlight unforeseen issues, determine the scope of the issue, designate mechanisms to mitigate the issue, implement the solution. And anticipated outcomes, preliminarily, the working group has determined that it may be beneficial to establish a change control framework that can help mitigate the destabilizing effect from unforeseen issues encountered after policy implementation. So as an overall subject, specifically the questions that were asked, number 5A, are there circumstances in which the application window should be frozen while unforeseen policy issues are considered and resolved? If so, should there be a threshold or standard that must be reached before considering freezing an application window? The GAC had no comments on this. Registry said it's unlikely. It would be better to continue to evaluate and accept applications to keep from disenfranchising potential applicants. This would also throw more unpredictability into the mix. And then the IPC, their comment is this question presupposes windows, which we shouldn't assume. Second, policy questions arise with some regularity. It can be dealt with in the context of an ongoing process. The lightweight policy processes developed by the Policy Implementation Working Group should help deal with these in a timely and orderly fashion. We can foresee no reason to freeze an application process for a policy issue. Any threshold to do so would have to be incredibly high, essentially cataclysmic. However, there may be operational issues of severity sufficient to freeze around, for example, financial failure of ICANN, And Steve, I don't know why my thing is cut off here, but you know what the rest of that said?
Hi, Jeff. This is Steve. Where did you leave off?
The last sentence of the IPC in 5A, it's just, I don't know, because it's the PDF that got cut off.
Sure. I think it says, however, there may be operational issues of a severity sufficient to freeze around, for example, financial failure by ICANN, disaster and recovery, or external force majeure. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. So this is whether the freeze and application process. I think the registries and the IPC seem to agree that it has to be incredibly severe in order to stop applications from coming in. Anyone have any thoughts, questions, comments on that? Okay. Seeing none, I think that supports our initial findings. 5B, the question is, if the board is faced with questions that cannot be addressed by the policy recommendations that they were sent, must the board bring the issue back to the GNSL and PDP processes? And we do have new processes like the expedited PDP or the GNSL guidance process. So there were certain issues, for example, the trademark claims plus 50 was an example that did not go back to the PDP. There were no processes like this, I believe, at the time. Changes to the registry agreement didn't go back to the PDP or the GNSL. So there were some changes that did not go through this. To this, the GAC responds, the GAC would expect the board to have regard to all available evidence and advice, including advice from the GAC. Reverting to applicable GNSL and PDP processes appears to be one of a range of options the board can consider. Others might include seeking expert advice on specialized issues. Experience from the recent round suggests that conclusion of a PDP on such a wide-ranging set of issues is unlikely to be an endpoint agreed by all stakeholders in practice. The GAC will make every effort to participate in any agreed post-PDP policy. The registries have stated generally yes, particularly if matters at hand could contradict established policy. We also reiterate that the role of the GAC, the board, and GNSL resolving issues that arise during any ongoing mechanism should be well understood and, documented. And then the IPC states, yes, but such a question should not trigger an all-stop for applications already filed. The new policy can be developed and implemented on a date certain, affecting only applications after that date, at least in a continuous process. This is how the development and adoption of consensus policy works. Thoughts, questions? Don had raised in the chat, who would make the determination on what is severe? I think this was in response to the last question of when the board could freeze an application process. And Aubrey, without her chair, oh, a joke. Okay, I guess partially a joke. Everyone yelling, the sky is falling. And then the board deciding it was so without the empowered community objecting. That would seem to be pretty extreme. Anybody else have any comments on that? Okay, and then the last, nope, 5C, sorry, it's not the last one. Should a standard be established to discriminate between issues that must be solved during an open application window and those that can be postponed until a subsequent subsequent application window? Give an example. The GAC had no comments on this. The registries basically said that we should now narrow our focus on issues where a change in policy is required and where most of the community believes the issue is of such significance that it should block the initiation of future applications process. As examples, we believe the last hour policy changes to the program, name collision, closed generic restrictions, Spec 13, they merit revisiting so that there could be properly reflected in the applicable policy. Issues that are not matters of policy but warrant improvement should not be the focus of our PDP. ICANN staff should work with narrow implementation teams to address these issues without delaying the work of the overall PDP. Similarly, issues that may warrant policy revision but need not impede a subsequent application process should be addressed on an ongoing basis through the policy development process. Without unjustifiably blocking future applicants that are willing to proceed within the current framework. And the IPC says, no, there should not be a policy standard, or should not be a standard for policy issues. Operational issues, yes. And the examples were mentioned about financial crisis, et cetera. Okay, any thoughts on those? Okay, and then finally, any other issues related to the subject? Sounds the easy one. The registry said no. And the GAC said procedures for implementing new expansions should ensure and enable participation from all relevant stakeholders from the affected communities, both empowering them to take part as applicants, especially from underserved regions, and to have a fair say when their legitimate interests are affected by TLD applications. And the ICC says stakeholders need to participate fully as policies developed rather than leaving the work to others and depending on ex post facto opportunities to make changes. Any last questions on that? These all seem to be related to predictability. I'm just trying to catch up in the chat here. I think there's still more discussion on the test, on testing these out. Okay, seeing no comments, I think we can jump to six. Six is fairly, the topic about should the number of applications in total be limited or be limited per entity during an application window. And it seemed like that when we discussed this issue months ago, the group seemed to be leaning towards against application limits or a limit per entity. And it was the working group that agreed that establishing application limits are seemingly anti-competitive and possibly contrary the original principles of competition, and it seemed not as being realistic. So the first question says, basically asks about whether we should have a limit from a single entity. Should a limit or number of a limit on number of applications from a single entity? So, for example, you had the largest applicants were Donuts with over 300. You had Google with over 100 initially, and others that had dozens of applications. And at this point, there's no comments to that from the GAC. The registries do not support that, and the IPC also does not support that. And then the follow-up was, well, if there was a limit, how would you establish the limit? Nobody agreed that there should be a limit. There were no comments. Essentially, the registries basically said there's no rational basis for a limit. The third part of the question is, do you limit the total number of applications in the application window? What mechanisms could you have to do it? And they D asked what the total number of applications would be, and C said what would be the mechanism. And in both of those, you got the same responses from all three of the groups here, that it's not applicable or that there's no rational basis to do it. And then since there was no one that believed that you should limit it, I said, well, how would that impact the fees? And the DAC had no comments. The registry said, regardless of the number of applications, ICANN's standard is to look for the financial stability of the company, including all applied for and currently owned CLDs. There's no rational basis for changes. And the registry, or sorry, the IPC stated that fees would have to increase as ICANN may have to defend itself against an antitrust claim. I guess this is if they limited the number of applications. Seeing no comments, I want to ask, is there any comments here? Does anyone feel differently than we used to, or that the IPC and registries, does anyone believe that there should be limits? Does anyone change their mind? Rhonda has said limits not realistic at all. It's for free competition and open opportunity to all who want to apply. But Annabeth asks the question, is it fair, Rhonda, that those companies with a lot of money can afford to apply for many, but newcomers have problems doing that? Was it one of the reasons behind opening up that there should be fair competition? Anybody want to say anything about those comments? Kurt's typing. Others are typing. I think WorkTrack 1 is considering how we do outreach and how to ensure that those that may not have the resources are able to apply. That may address, Annabeth, part of your comment. Okay. People are typing, but I'll go on to the next one and then read the chat if anyone wants to step in. Next question says, well, is it essentially with limits to number of applications in total or by a single entity, would that be anti-competitive? DAC had no comments. The registry said potentially. We believe that limitations of this nature could prevent registries from succeeding through diverse business models. And the IPC said, see the answer above, which said that they did view that to be anti-competitive. Next question, do limits to the total number of applications for an application window and or from a single entity favor insiders? An interesting question. GAC did not have an answer. The registries said it's unclear whether this would be the case. We believe in an open, unrestricted, and continuous process would be greatly beneficial to, or generally beneficial to insiders and new applicants alike. The IPC said if there's a closed window process similar to 2012, it would favor insiders, but more broadly, any process that is complex and subject to rules that can be gained will favor insiders. Going back to the chat, Kurt has written that, at Annabeth, I think interfering with markets in a way to vet less financial applicants is not workable. I think your concern is best addressed by the applicant support question. And Ruben says, I think the competitive angle is per string. So those who apply for many are diluting their strength low or high among many strings and making it actually easier for the focused applicants. .club and .cloud registries are examples of that from 2012 round. Okay, any other questions? I mean, it seems like most of the group that's been speaking and made comments are not in favor of limits, but you know, some have noted that we should make sure that we should ensure fairness and an applicant support program and others to ensure that the process is not dominated by insiders and to give opportunities those that may not the insiders or those that may not have the sufficient resources to actually apply. Okay, and then finally, some open questions. Are there any other overarching issues that we should be considering was asked of the groups, the registries? Believe that we should narrow our focus. I think it's a significant policy issue that must be addressed. And defer other issues to staff to develop implementation guidance and other policy efforts that need not gate the PDP. Otherwise, this process will be stymied both in terms of time and ability to reach consensus. And the IPC has no further issues, but may provide, always reserves its right to provide future comments. And then there are some additional resources that were submitted by different groups to take a look at in reaching our conclusions eventually on a number of different issues. A lot of people are agreeing with Jorge, so let me go back and see what his comment was. Jorge says, the key is, again, to have an effective outreach and interested stakeholders have a fair say vis-a-vis strings that may interest them, that community-based applications work, and the applicant support program really works. And everyone, I agree with that statement. I think that's right. Cheryl Langdon or Annabeth agree with that. Okay, I think we've made it through this document. I know we went a little fast, but I'm glad we can make it through, which will leave Aubrey and I and the leadership team with some good drafting work over the next few weeks to make sure that we come up with some principles based on the responses to this document and the discussions we've had over the last few weeks. I appreciate everyone's feedback on this and patience throughout this process, and I want to turn it back to Aubrey.
Thank you. This is Aubrey speaking. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, everybody. It's really exciting that we've actually really reached the end of this reading. So at this point, I'd like to go to any other business. I have one piece of any other business that I want to mention before we close. There'll be a poll on this issue coming soon. It's a scheduling issue. There have been several issues with the 3 UTC Monday meeting. The 3 UTC Monday meeting falls on Sunday night for a large sector of people, and that is mighty unpleasant for them. So what's being asked is to substitute that time slot for 3 UTC Tuesday. So the meeting would fall for the people in the minus UTC time zones would fall on Monday night in the same time as it would have been on Sunday night, but at least it's not breaking up their Sunday. So we'll be doing a poll on that, and I just wanted to alert you all to look for that poll and get it in, and basically we would just change that scheduled slot by one day. Any questions on that? If not, anybody else have any other business? I see nobody having any other business. I hear nobody having any other business. I think it's wonderful that I can end this meeting 6 minutes before it's time. I wish you all a really, really happy holiday, though I hope to see some of you at WorkTrack 3's meeting or hear several of you at WorkTrack 3's meeting. But otherwise, happy holidays, Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's, Festivus, whatever. So thanks a lot, and see you in the new year for the most part. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Hey, thank you again. The meeting has adjourned. Operator, please stop the roof and disconnect. Bye. Have a great day, everyone.